Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Jury Death Sentence Recommendations Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 13, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Hearst v. Florida. Timothy Lee Hearst was convicted of murdering his co-worker and sentenced to death after a jury recommended that penalty by a vote of 7-5. The question before the court here is whether Florida's death sentencing scheme, which Hearst contends does not require unanimity in the jury death recommendation or in the finding of underlying aggravating factors, violates the Sixth or Eighth Amendments in light of the court's 2002 decision, Ring v. Arizona, which holds that the aggravating factors necessary for imposition of a death sentence be found by a jury. To discuss the case, we have Jack Park, who is of counsel with Strickland Brockington Lewis LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Park.
This podcast concerns the case of Hearst versus Florida, which presents the question, as framed by the U.S. Supreme Court, whether Florida's death sentencing scheme violates the Sixth Amendment or the Eighth Amendment in the light of the court's 2002 decision in Ring versus Arizona. As Hearst's lawyer Seth Waxman put it at the opening of his time, under Florida law, Timothy Hearst will go to his death despite the fact that a judge, not a jury, made the factual finding that rendered him eligible for death. In Ring, the court held that allowing a sentencing judge sitting without a jury to find an aggravating factor that allows for the imposition of the death penalty violates the Sixth Amendment because it invades the province of the jury. The majority declared capital defendants, no less than non-capital defendants, we conclude, are entitled to a jury determination of any fact on which the legislature conditions an increase in their maximum punishment. Hearst was argued last week on October 13, and it proceeded in the light of first two earlier death penalty oral arguments already this term, Kansas versus Carr and Kansas versus Gleason, which ask about the instructions regarding mitigating factors in capital cases, and also Carr involves the joint sentencing of two brothers in a capital case. And second, Justice Breyer's dissenting opinion in Glossop versus Gross, in which he was joined by Justice Ginsburg at the end of last term, and there he stated that he believes it highly likely that the death penalty violates the Eighth Amendment. Hearst was charged with the murder of the manager of a Popeyes restaurant at which Hearst also worked. That murder also included a robbery, and the manager was found in a freezer, bound, gagged, and stabbed multiple times. The jury found Hearst guilty as charged. The first jury recommended death by an 11-1 vote, and Hearst was sentenced to death. But the Florida Supreme Court ordered a resentencing on post-conviction collateral review. The second jury recommended the death penalty through a 7-5 vote. The trial judge sentenced Hearst to death, finding that his crimes were heinous, atrocious, or cruel, which is a statutory aggravating factor, and that the murder was convicted during the commission of a robbery, another statutory aggravating factor. The trial judge balanced those aggravating factors, to which it gave great weight, against the statutory and other mitigating factors and concluded that the death penalty was warranted. This reflects the Florida statutory procedure, which calls for an advisory sentence by the jury. And in pertinent part, the statute says, after hearing all the evidence, the jury shall deliberate and render an advisory sentence to the court based upon the following matters. Its conclusion that sufficient aggravating circumstances exist, that sufficient mitigating circumstances exist, that whether they outweigh the aggravating circumstances that have already been found to exist, and based on these considerations, whether the defendant should be sentenced to life imprisonment or death. And then the next statutory subsection says, notwithstanding the recommendation of a majority of the jury, the court, after weighing the aggravating and mitigating circumstances, shall enter a sentence of life imprisonment or death. But if the court imposes a sentence of death, it shall set forth in writing its findings upon which the sentence of death is based. The issues in the case are, first, whether the complaint about the jury's lack of unanimity, or at one point in the argument whether 10-2 would be sufficient. And second, the judges having to make a finding of a specific aggravator to impose the death sentence after the jury makes a general finding, and that is said to violate Ring. Per Hurst, the jury can't recommend death unless seven of them each agree that some aggravator is satisfied. They don't have to say which one that is, and they may have different ones in mind. But after saying that the state can't have it both ways, Hurst's lawyer did. As he said, either the jury is correctly told that its role is advisory, in which case there is a Ring violation, or the instruction it's given violates the Eighth Amendment under Caldwell versus Mississippi because, as in Caldwell, it misleadingly, quote, minimizes the jury's sense of responsibility for determining the appropriateness of death. In Caldwell versus Mississippi in 1985, the court said you can't lead the sentencer in a capital case to believe that the responsibility for determining the appropriateness of the defendant's death rests elsewhere, somewhere like an appellate court. One thing that Chief Justice Roberts observed is that the lack of an express agreement is unremarkable because it happens all the time in jury verdicts. Whatever the jury thinks is basically covered up by the general verdict. Per Florida, because the jury returned a recommendation of death and found Hurst guilty of a crime that carries with it the possible sentence of death, the court can infer that it found at least one aggravating factor. It necessarily had to find that the aggravating factors it saw outweighed any mitigating factors it considered, and it made a blanket recommendation. The judge's finding in Florida suggests that the judge's finding of a specific factor on the basis of that general finding should not violate Ring. As Florida said, at the guilt phase, they convicted of murder, which could either have been felony murder with the predicate underlying felony being robbery or premeditated murder. In order to recommend death, the jury is told that it must find an aggravator. As Florida explained, a judge cannot override a jury recommendation of life or a 6-6 split without violating Ring, subject to a limited caveat like a finding of a double murder. And in this regard, Florida's statutory crimes eligible for the death penalty, like many other states, are a laundry list that include the capital felony having been committed by a person previously committed of a felony and under sentence of imprisonment, and the defendant having been previously convicted of another capital felony or a felony involving the use or threat of violence to the person. Or finally, the victim of the capital felony being a law enforcement officer engaged in the performance of his or her official duties. If the charge were to that effect and the jury found that, then the judge could override. Justice Kagan asked Florida hypothetically, what if the jury finds an aggravator and the judge finds a different one? How does that not violate Ring? Florida responded that because the jury finding makes the defendant eligible for the death penalty, the judge's finding doesn't change that. Plus, the judge can give mercy for any reason, and that has been seen as a benefit in previous cases, such as Prophet versus Florida from 1976. That's definitely pre-Ring. I hesitate to make a judgment as to how this case will come out, but Jonathan, I do note a couple of bigger themes. Jonathan Keim, writing on Bench Memos, observes that the Ring Apprendi jurisprudence about the role of juries in finding aggravating factors has stemmed from an unlikely alliance between originalists, Justice Scalia and Thomas, with liberals. And the question is whether that alliance will hold in this case. That's unclear, but Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan appear to be on Hearst's side. So part of that unlikely alliance is present. Second, as to the relative merits of judges and juries, Alabama and Montana, in an amicus brief in support of Florida, observe that states can argue that states can conclude that judicial sentencing is superior to jury sentencing in capital cases because, first, it's less arbitrary and more consistent, and second, because it's better suited to general deterrence. They also argue that historically, judges have been responsible for sentences and juries responsible for guilt. And on the other side, one or more of the top side, Hearst amici, argue that judges who are, or point out that judges who are elected are under pressure to impose death sentences.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.